This is the Todd Wright Toddcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group, longtime supporters of my podcast, now my webcast, and also Todd Wright Tour golf tournaments, including the upcoming Todd Wright Tour XXIX Good versus Evil, February 6th at Chichi Rodriguez Golf Club in Clearwater. For golf info, you can email toddwrightgolf@gmail.com, toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. For a free consultation, anything legally from Brandon Legal Group, because they are a full-service law firm, you can simply go to their website, brandonlegalgroup.com, and look for the box that says request a free consultation. Or you can call for a free consultation at 844-4-BLG-4ME. 844-4-BLG-4ME, or visit brandonlegalgroup.com. Remember, while their home office is in Brandon, Florida, I visited many times, they service the greater Tampa Bay area. And Brandon Legal Group has already committed to be with me for all of 2021. Webcast, podcast, and of course, Todd Wright Tour golf tournaments. Thanks to brandonlegalgroup.com. Papa John's of Tampa Bay has always been a supporter of Todd Wright Tour golf tournaments, pizza prize packs, catering golf tournaments, or various other things. They've catered draft parties for me when we're not at Hooters over the last few years. They have a new epic stuffed crust pizza. Being totally transparent, I've never been a fan of the stuffed crust pizza. I actually even order my pizzas from Papa John's like cheese. So I don't desire more cheese from my pizza. However, this is the first stuffed crust pizza in Papa John's history. And speaking to Denny, store manager of the West Kennedy location closest to me, it is doing extremely well. It is promotionally priced at $12. And if you are a fan of more cheese when you order pizza, the epic stuffed crust pizza from Papa John's might be to your liking. I personally order more papadillas these days than pizzas from Papa John's. I love the papadillas. They continue to be promotionally priced at just $6, and they have done nothing but add different flavors, and you can tweak the ingredients a little bit as well. For example, I often add bacon to my double cheeseburger papadilla. Papa John's of Tampa Bay, thank you for your support of Todd Wright Tour golf tournaments, podcasts, and really anything I need. It is very much appreciated. Email for podcast purposes is right.todd@yahoo.com. We just wrapped up season 5 of the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast. As a matter of fact, today I was at Bill Curry Ford for the ceremonial check presentation to a 2-time podcast league winner and also a Todd Wright Tour golfer in Rob Wright. Rob won $1,000 from Bill Curry Ford as the winner of the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast League for 2020. Rob is an excellent fantasy player. He has a lovely wife, and I'm very happy for him. And it was just nice to catch up with him a little bit today, speak to Grace, the social media director at Bill Curry Ford, and see our friend Sean Sullivan, who's a huge fan of mine, joebucksfan.com, and also the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So thanks, Sean, Grace, Bill Curry Ford. Sean also told me in no uncertain terms, he wants his league back at Bill Curry Ford in 2021. He is also open to hosting additional leagues if Hooters comes back as our sponsor of the Fantasy Football Podcast. But Hooters doesn't want draft parties as they didn't last August and September. Sean said he'll welcome more leagues. So if you want to make sure you get in on fantasy football via my podcast league in 2021, since we are guaranteed now to have multiple leagues based on the commitment from Sean at Bill Curry Ford. You can always email me at ToddWrightFantasyFootball@gmail.com. ToddWrightFantasyFootball@gmail.com. Chris, a longtime fantasy player and listener of mine and a previous podcast league player, actually reached out to me in the last 24, 48 hours and just kind of asked where I was, because we haven't done a Toddcast in a few weeks since we buried loser Lovie Smith, who would be a horrible, horrible hire if the Bears are going to make changes on their coaching staff from a coordinator standpoint. Bringing back Lovie Smith as a defensive coordinator is another losing move for any organization, in my opinion. Remember, the success of the Bears, as I talked about in that podcast, were in the Ron Rivera years, where he was the defensive coordinator, not just the Lovie Smith years. Rivera, of course, back in the playoffs this weekend in his first year with Washington, despite all the distractions in Washington and the fact that Rivera was battling cancer and rotated through multiple quarterbacks. Rivera clearly deserves more of the credit than he ever received for that Bears team going to the Super Bowl 14 years ago. And anyway, that was the podcast we last did. Chris, thanks for asking about me. I just had a lot of fantasy podcasts to crank out for the last couple weeks of the fantasy football season. I needed to do it for the listeners. I needed to do it because it was the height of the fantasy football playoffs. We also had to reach a certain number of episodes to satisfy Hooters and their sponsorship agreement, which we did. And it was also the holidays. And while the holidays don't mean a lot to me as someone with no living family, the holidays mean a lot to people that distribute and take time to get my podcast out there to you. And they had lots of things to do. So I was sensitive to that. And just thought, I'll crank out the fantasy podcast. We'll take a little break with the Todd Wright Toddcast, but we're back with this now. And just thanks for asking about me. I really appreciate it. I just want to talk a little bit about the upcoming National Football League playoffs. I think that's on everyone's mind. And it's the first year they are dubbing it Super Wild Card Weekend. I wish they'd get rid of the wild card term for this simple reason. Every team hosting a game in the wild card or super wild card round is better than a wild card. They won their division. I feel calling it a wild card game or a wild card round or a super wild card weekend is an insult to the home teams. They are not wild cards. Say what you want about Washington having a losing record. They won their division. They are not a wild card. I know it's about marketing. I'm just arguing with semantics. That's why I don't use the term. And I wish the NFL would drop the term, but they're not asking me. And they just added a super to it. Just like they have the Super Bowl, they now have Super Wild Card Weekend with Triple Header Saturday, Triple Header Sunday. I have no idea what the hell's going on Nickelodeon late Sunday afternoon, but I'm going to check it out. Because apparently it's more than just a simulcast. And there's some work going into the way the game will be presented and some features. And they're just going to get creative with it. So I'll check it out occasionally. It's not going to be the primary way I watch that Bears and Saints game. But I remember when I saw it announced, I was like, okay, why is a game being simulcast on Nickelodeon? I understand ESPN simulcasting a game on ABC, but why does Fox. Yeah, Fox. That's a Fox game. Why does that game need to be simulcast on Nickelodeon? Is it on CBS? I think it might be. Nickelodeon might be a CBS property. I lose track of all this. But yeah, just on an aside, it's not a straight simulcast. I know it will have virtually no appeal to most of you, but I am going to go over and check it out on occasion. All right, let's just talk about, okay, so first round buys this year are exclusive to the one seeds. This was a bad year to be the two seed. I feel a little bit for the Bills. First time in over 25 years, the Bills are in this kind of position with what many consider is a Super Bowl contending type team. And even odds at the Westgate Superbook have the Bills as a 3-1 choice to reach the Super Bowl. The Chiefs are even money. The Bills are 3-1. In any previous year, the Bills would be taking a bye week this week, getting healthy, doing extra game planning, just resting their legs. They don't get the benefit of that this year. You can look back and argue and say, is this a better way to do it beyond just having seven teams in the playoffs rather than six? Why does a two deserve a bye and a three doesn't, since a two isn't better than the one? I think it's unfortunate that the Bills have to play this first week and their draw is rather difficult. I've looked a lot at this game from various angles. The Colts have struck me all year. I mean, the Colts getting in as a seven, to me, justifies the expansion of the playoffs, where the Bears getting in as a seven, when you already have a division champion in with a sub 500 record, shows that the NFC didn't have seven worthy teams. To me, the NFC had five worthy teams. That's it. The Bears are not playoff worthy, even though they played better down the stretch. They are a double-digit underdog to the two-seeded Saints in what, at the time we're recording this podcast, is the largest spread. And the analytics say the Saints are being under-wagered. That the analytics say the Saints are closer to two touchdowns better than the Bears when you factor in the quarterbacks and everything else. Even more so than the Bucks against Washington, traveling to Washington, and the lines actually reflect that. But the Colts as a seven is, I was actually surprised going into the final week that the Colts needed help to get in the playoffs. The Colts, what, about a month before had beaten the Packers. The Packers, it just seems like every 6 to 7 weeks they have this dog game. And they've often had that game in the playoffs. Now, they do have home field throughout these playoffs, which either Aaron Rodgers has only had once before or never before. But that's always my concern, that Aaron Rodgers has only gone to the Super Bowl one time. And too often, like last year in the NFC Championship, often in the NFC Championship, the Packers just have a dog game. And it's a dog game early, and they don't adjust. They don't fight. It happened earlier this year when things turned in Tampa Bay. They went from being up 10-0 to Rodgers throwing a pick six. The Bucs took the momentum, took a big lead in the first half, and the Packers really quit in that game, and it's the only game Tom Brady won against a team that finished with a winning record. The Packers essentially waved the white flag in the game, and I still don't have an explanation why. So I'm wondering at any point here, not this week because the Packers have the bye, could that happen to the Packers again? That if they look bad or things aren't going their way, do they have the fight? Can they make the adjustment? Is the team attitude right to overcome negative factors and go on to win the game? Is there enough want to? This is becoming a league where double-digit deficits are more overcome than ever before. Last year, Patrick Mahomes overcame 5 double-digit deficits to go on to win. As a matter of fact, I think even in the games Patrick Mahomes lost last year, the Chiefs were never down 10. In games they were down 10 or more, I believe he was 5-0. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, for whatever reason, don't seem to have that. And you can say, well, they changed coaches. Yeah, last year, look at that NFC title game and tell me what you saw. Tell me you didn't see a team that just didn't have the want to, and or the adjustments, or the right attitude to overcome and by any means necessary, fight to the finish to win when the stakes were high. But Packers don't play this week. Chiefs don't play this week. In a previous year, the Bills and the Saints wouldn't play this week. The Saints have, I feel, a pretty easy draw in the Bears. Again, I don't feel the Bears are a playoff-worthy team. I'm not even sure the Bears will be keeping their GM and head coach after this game. They may not be keeping their quarterback after this game. And they're a double-digit underdog for a reason. The Saints could rout the Bears. I think the only case I can make for the Bears even being in the game would be a slow start for the Saints offense, a very physical level of play from the get-go from the Bears defense, and mistake-free, high-level play from Trubisky, Montgomery, and Robinson for the Bears. Otherwise, again, most of the info on the Saints-Bears game looks like a double-digit minimum or a blowout for New Orleans in the late afternoon game on Sunday. I love the Bills. I think they're playing terrific football. I just worry about them in this matchup because, as I alluded to before talking about the pitfalls of the Green Bay Packers, the Colts all year have struck me as a team that can match up and give problems to just about anybody. They have a very talented head coach. They have an effective young running back in Jonathan Taylor. They have a veteran quarterback who, while he's never gone to a Super Bowl, he's seen it all. He's played on one leg. He's a gunslinger. Nothing seems to faze him. Colts have talented defensive personnel. They have some quality people on that offensive line. T.Y. Hilton was a very hot wide receiver the last month of the season. I don't disagree that the Bills deserve to be considered a Super Bowl contender. It almost feels like Buffalo luck that this year happened, the first year of the expanded playoffs. They get a draw in Indianapolis. That's an extremely tough matchup. And things could go Indy's way. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Colts defeated the Bills. I don't think this is a game where the Bills are just going to put up 35, 42, 49 and run away from the Colts. It doesn't feel that way. The Rams-Seahawks is, you know how those battles for years between the Ravens and Steelers were just so good to watch. It was very physical football, yards, first downs, field position, field goals, touchdowns, everything was at a premium. The Rams and Seahawks just seem to bring out the worst in each other. Also, I think both of them are at a point now where they're not playing their best football. the Seahawks opened as a, this is odd, the Seahawks opened as a 5-point favorite in Saturday in the late afternoon window. And the number has gone down, even though we don't know if Jared Goff is going to play. And remember, it was just a couple of weeks ago, Jared Goff hurt his thumb. And this is the same injury where a year ago, and it could be more, it could be less extensive. But remember, Drew Brees missed 5 games with a similar injury last year. Goff's availability could be a facade. And after throwing an early pick that led to Arizona's what only touchdown in week 17, the former Arizona Hotshots quarterback from the AAF said he was good, and he was, and he settled in. Granted, the Rams this year have showcased more of an offense that wants to run the ball than be that up and down the field throwing offense that we saw take them to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. And that also plays to their strengths on defense with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, two of the 5 or 6 best defensive individual players in the game. So it's odd to me the timing of this game. The Seahawks did win this battle most recently, but over the last 3 years, the Rams make Russell Wilson and the Seahawks look bad. And this time of year, and we saw this in the playoffs last year with teams that did advance, that advanced often based on what they did defensively. I like the Rams defense more than I like the Seattle defense. So I understand why the number has dropped and things are moving in the direction of the Rams, that Seattle is in essence only favored in the game because they have the game on their home field. And without the 12th man in the stands, what does that really mean? Even if the Rams don't have Jared Goff. And let's face it, at times Jared Goff looks really bad. We wonder the same thing long-term about what the Rams are going to do with Jared Goff and that huge deal that we also are wondering about the Eagles and what are they going to do long-term with Carson Wentz's deal. The late Saturday game is the Bucs in Washington. Washington was the best of a bad division. But some good things have happened in Washington this year. With Ron Rivera in his first year as head coach, with the return of Alex Smith, a more than capable running game with a healthy Antonio Gibson who suffered a turf toe type injury a few weeks ago. Not sure of what his level of availability will be in this game. McLaurin has been a consistent target for any Washington quarterback. They have spent a lot of draft value on that defensive line. They are a capable pass defense. Clearly, the Buccaneers were going to be favored in this game. The money has been on Tampa Bay, heavily increasing the line in this game. It sort of puts two factors, conflicting factors at play when you look at it from a handicapping standpoint. Brady doesn't lose to teams with losing records this year, but the Bucs have looked bad in prime time. They've saved their worst for when they've had a lot of eyeballs on them. And this is a primetime NBC game on Saturday night. It wouldn't surprise me if Washington hangs around in this game. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't think that defense is going to allow Brady to put up 450 yards and 4 touchdowns or more. What Washington can do with ball possession, efficient play from Alex Smith, if he is able to take every snap. Remember, Washington should have gotten your attention when they beat the undefeated Steelers a handful of weeks ago, down 14-0 late in the first half. and they went on to win that game and kind of expose some of the flaws of this Pittsburgh Steelers team that many have questioning whether or not the Steelers are a Super Bowl contender as we get into January. But while Washington is inferior in record, I think they're capable of competing. And I would expect they would compete in this game and not make it easy for Tom Brady and the Buccaneer offense. And the more Washington can control the ball and the clock, the more likely this game stays interesting in the fourth quarter. From a Vegas standpoint, it wouldn't surprise me if Washington covers in this game and doesn't win in this game as the line continues to increase. Early Sunday action, while the Bucs are the third choice on the futures board at the Westgate Superbook to get to the Super Bowl out of the NFC as the 5 seed, the same can be said for the 5 seed in the AFC, and that's the Ravens. The Ravens have had a similar late season push that the Bucs have had. The difference is the Ravens needed it just to get into the playoffs after a very disappointing first few months of the season. Can Lamar Jackson overcome his failures of his first 2 seasons as a playoff quarterback, going 0-2, 5 turnovers. I just remember in the playoff game last year, which I believe was against the Titans, Jackson put up about 500 yards of offense. The points just weren't there. He didn't seem to have the support. And it was just kind of all for naught. It wasn't a Ravens-style game. They weren't playing from the lead. Tennessee really never was threatened. Tennessee never got out of their comfort zone. I like the Titans. I like a lot about the Titans. I don't like them in this spot. And it doesn't surprise me at all that the odds makers open Baltimore as a 4-point road favorite. The Bucs and the Ravens, both 5 seeds, are favored on the road at the 4 seed. And look, Tennessee has a fine record. Won a competitive division with Indianapolis. But, you know, even last week, Indy went right down to the end and had to kick a field goal to get by Houston, which has been out of the playoff race for some time. It does concern me from a Tennessee standpoint that they can control the game simply with Derrick Henry and not allow Baltimore to move up and down the field. And then does that take the ball out of Derrick Henry's hands and put it in Ryan Tannehill's hands, where he's forced to throw on early downs and be more predictable? So from that standpoint, you know, it's hard for me not to ignore the fact that Lamar Jackson has flopped in 2 playoff performances. But I'm giving the Ravens as a team and him the benefit of the doubt, and also John Harbaugh, who I respect immensely, that they are going to play a better game than they've played in the playoffs the last couple of years. And I think whoever can play from the lead in this game is more likely to maintain it. We've already talked about the Bears and Saints. Browns and Steelers, this could change a lot. I mean, I'm taping this on Thursday night. Late Thursday evening, the Browns have had to be working virtually. Baker Mayfield, I don't believe, had thrown a ball all week when he was quoted Thursday afternoon. The Browns didn't have their head coach active. He had to be isolated due to COVID-19. There are more than a handful of players, in addition to the head coach, affected by COVID. We know the NFL all season has not pushed a game back for competitive purposes. This is the last game of the weekend that benefits Cleveland. It didn't impress me that last week Cleveland barely beat Pittsburgh with Mason Rudolph as quarterback. I expected better. And it just feels like Cleveland is fighting more internal hurdles. And let's face it, yeah, they haven't been to the playoffs since 2002. You had the Browns ending their drought, the Bucks ending their drought since 2007. It's not like this is everyday stuff for them, and we know what we're doing. They haven't been in this position. And as recently as a couple weeks ago, when they were in this position without some players due to COVID, they lost to the New York Jets. So while I'm not a believer in the Steelers, and I really wasn't even before they blew the 14-0 lead to Washington in what, week 12, week 13 of the regular season, this just feels like a game where Pittsburgh can get by. And then I just wonder if Pittsburgh is going to be taken behind the woodshed next week and exposed for some of their flaws that surfaced when that winning streak ended, or even had people questioning whether they were ever as good as being the last undefeated team out there. The game opened as Pittsburgh laying 3.5. It has gone up to 6.5. But let's just sort of play this out. Let's say Pittsburgh wins as they are the 3 seed. See if my pen works here. If Pittsburgh wins as the 3 seed, we already know KC is going to advance. Depending on what happens in the other games, I think Ravens-Titans, to me, it's a bit of a toss-up. So you got the 4-5 there. If the Bills win, the Steelers would go to Buffalo. I actually think the Bills have a tougher game this week in the Colts than they would have next week with the Steelers coming in. If the Bills, for whatever reason, lost that game and Indy advanced, then Indy would go to KC, and then the Steelers would host next week against either the Ravens or the Titans. And I don't know, it feels like the Steelers might have a better chance against the Ravens or Titans than they would going up against a potential high-octane offense in Buffalo and just letting that game get away from them. But those are just some of my thoughts looking ahead to what should be an outstanding playoff weekend. Whether the 14 teams in the playoffs deserve to be playoff teams or not, namely Chicago and Washington, having the triple header on Saturday and Sunday is awesome. We knew this was coming for a long time, and enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it, and we'll be back at some point either mid-weekend or after the weekend ends with thoughts on those games and perhaps some of the coaching changes by then as well. There wasn't any big surprise from a pro coaching standpoint in terms of firings. It happened in college instead, with Texas originally saying they were keeping Tom Herman, then dumping Tom Herman to bring in Steve Sarkisian, the current and outgoing offensive coordinator for Nick Saban at Alabama. So we'll have some coaching thoughts NFL-wise next week. Thank you for listening to the Todd Wright Toddcast, presented by Brandon Legal Group and Papa John's of Tampa Bay. We'll talk to you next time.